Hello and welcome once again to another installment of the Verse by Verse Bible Teaching. This outreach is a ministry of the Wash and Word. The Wash and Word is a hand car washing business that's located in Churchill, Tennessee on Highway 11W in the Palace Shopping Center. My name is Matthew, and along with my wife, Victoria, we own and operate this business in an effort to bring forth these Bible teaching messages. We firmly believe that verse-by-verse Bible teaching is the most effective way to properly equip the saints of God for the things that this world would have at us now and what would be coming down in the future. The verse-by-verse Bible teaching method forbids the teacher to eliminate or skirt from the difficult teachings. As well, it forbids the hearer from being exempt from the hard teachings that they don't want to hear. And this is why we do it in this format. If you have any questions about this business or about this ministry, simply go to the washandword.com website. That's wash, the letter N, word.com. That being said, let us get back into our verse-by-verse teaching of the book of Ecclesiastes. We finished chapter 1 in our last few messages, and today we'll begin looking in at chapter 2. And I don't typically title my sermons or my messages or my chapters, but if I had to title this one, it would simply be this: The Futility and Failure of a Pleasure-Seeking Life. Chapter 2 can be easily summed up as the futility and failure of a pleasure-seeking life. Now, Solomon is about to turn the page on what he discovered in chapter 1. Again, you can go back to the washandword.com website, and all of our messages are posted there. You can download them for free, listen to them for free, and I encourage you always to stay caught up in our verse-by-verse teachings. If you miss any of them, you can go back and listen to them. But we looked extensively at chapter 1, and what Solomon's main focus in chapter 1 was on what? Well, it was on nature. It was on the earth. It was on the things that we find in the environment. And he looked extensively at the various cycles that take place in nature. And this external focus in the environment and nature around him led him to just pretty much like all of his conclusions, a conclusion of futility. And when he finished looking at nature and found that the answer wasn't there, he began to look to himself. He began to seek a self-pleasure mentality and search for these answers. And friends, when science and nature fail people, they are naturally going to turn to themselves for the answers. Because if it's not in the external, the answers to life, the eternal joy that one seeks, or the peace, if it's not in the external, then it must be in the internal. And this is the underlying nature of the New Age philosophy. You can call it humanitarianism or secularism, New Age, the Age of Aquarius, where we are slowly evolving into our own little gods. We are becoming our own god, essentially. And that's what this New Age philosophy really is dictating, and it teaches that. And we see that is a result of this internal focus on self to find the answers to the meaning of life. Now, there's something I probably should have clarified as we study through chapter 1, and that is a little background on Solomon to kind of put into perspective why he is the way he is. And so if you would listen up as we turn to 1 Kings 11, 1 through 11. It's kind of easy to remember. It's 1 Kings 11, 1 through 11. And this is what it says about Solomon. King Solomon, however, loved many foreign women besides Pharaoh's daughter: Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, and Hittites. They were from the nations about which the Lord had told the Israelites, "You must not intermarry with them, because they will surely turn your hearts after their gods." Nevertheless, Solomon held fast to them in love. He had, brace yourself, 700 wives of royal birth and 300 concubines. And his wives, shocker, led him astray. As Solomon grew old, his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord his God, as the heart of David his father had been. He followed Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites. And so Solomon did evil in the eyes of the Lord. He did not follow the Lord completely, as David his father had done. On the hill east of Jerusalem, Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the detestable god of Moab, and for Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites. He did the same for all of his foreign wives, who burned incense and offered sacrifices to their gods. The Lord became angry with Solomon because his heart had turned away from the Lord, the God of Israel, who had appeared to him twice. Although he had forbidden Solomon to follow other gods, Solomon did not keep the Lord's command. And so the Lord said to Solomon, "Since this is your attitude, and you have not kept my covenant and decrees which I commanded you, I will most certainly tear the kingdom away from you and give it to one of your subordinates." I'm going to stop there. Again, that was 1 Kings 11, verses 1 through 11. And it really shed some light on why Solomon's focus upon the meaning of life, especially as he got into his older years, was so askew. He had divided his heart among the wicked and detestable gods and idols of Israel's enemies. And you can't establish a solid foundation of thinking. You can't come up with and equate logical explanations for things when you are standing on a base of complete detestable immorality. And so this is why we see Solomon's mind being focused on so many things. Again, nature and the world around him. Now he's going to be focusing on himself. He's going to focus on the things that man can accomplish. And in light of 1 Kings 11 that we just read, and in light of chapter 1, I can confidently start this message off, even before I begin reading chapter 2, with the following application point. Friends, there is no alternative to God. There is no alternative to God. And if anybody was more qualified to answer or come up with a rebuttal to the statement, there is no alternative to God, it would have been Solomon. He had everything at his disposal. He had so many different wives, so many different little gods. And if he couldn't find an alternative to God, surely nobody else can. Friends, there is nothing else that is an alternative to God. And when you have God, you don't need anything else. And as we will see, Solomon tried them all. And when you abandon God, and it is always that way, it's never vice versa, for God will never abandon us. But when we abandon God, one can expect to be full of empty, abundant and abandonment, and bank full of bankrupt. I'll say that again because it's cute and clever. If you abandon God, you can expect to be full of empty, abundant in abandonment, and bank full of bankrupt. And that is what a life apart from God eventually leads to. Let's look at verses 1 through 3 in chapter 2, book of Ecclesiastes. Solomon said, "I thought in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. But that also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is foolish. And what does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself up with wine and embracing folly. My mind still guided me with wisdom. I wanted to see what was worthwhile for men to do under heaven during the few days of their lives." Let's stop right there. Let us examine these opening verses. I want to give you a word. That word is called hedonism. Hedonism. Perhaps you've heard it, but are not quite sure what it means. The word hedonism is the doctrine that pleasure is the sole or chief good in life, and that the pursuit of it is the ideal aim of conduct. So hedonism is basically that your life exists for the sole purpose of pleasure and the pursuit of that pleasure. Now, there was another man in Scripture who pretty much had all that he needed. And at the end of his life, or towards the end of it, he found out the same thing Solomon did. Philippians 4:12 says, Paul speaking, "I know what it is to be in need. I know what it is to have plenty. And I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation." And so Paul is another one of those men who sought pleasure, who had everything that he needed. and yet found without Christ, it was a bankrupt philosophy. Acts 17:18 says, a group of Epicureans and Stoic philosophers began to dispute with Paul. Some of them asked, what is this babbler trying to say? And others remarked, he seems to be advocating foreign gods. They said this because Paul was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. Now, today's Epicureans, as it were, and Stoic philosophers, they are the ones that seem to be identifying society today. It is the modern-day Epicurean or the hedonistic viewpoint of the world today and how everything is acceptable, how right is now wrong and wrong is right. It is those Stoic philosophers of ancient that are today, under different titles, identifying society. They're setting the bar for what is normal. They're creating a new normal. But here's the problem. A life that is lived for pleasure must steadily increase in intensity, or what happens? It will begin to decrease in pleasure. I'll say that again because it's the crux of what Solomon is trying to accomplish here in the beginning of chapter 2. A life that is lived for pleasure must steadily increase in intensity, or it will decrease in pleasure. There must be a continual heightened and greater experience than the last one. It's very much what it describes how drugs take effect in a person's life. A little bit is good at first, but then you need more and more and more until you're a full-blown addict or dead. Now, you got to look at Solomon and you got to think to yourself, man, I bet he had a blast. I bet his life was just a nonstop party. I mean, look, he must have let loose. He had no financial concerns and he had no time restraints, which incidentally are probably the two biggest restraints you and I face every single day, financial concerns and time restraints. Never seems to be enough time and definitely doesn't seem to be enough money. And he probably had a sign on the door that said, if this palace is a rockin', don't come a knockin'. And night after night, he'd have these giant parties and these festivals, and it was just a lifelong party. And I can only imagine attending one of these parties probably made Mardi Gras look like, seem like you were watching a monotone documentary on the mating of snails. Just immeasurable amounts of money and resources going into these parties. In fact, another excerpt from 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 20 through 23 says this, one day's food supply for Solomon's household was 185 bushels of fine flour, 375 bushels of meal, 10 grain-fed cattle, that's 10 cows per day, 20 range cattle, and 100 sheep and miscellaneous deer, gazelle, bucks, and choice fowl. A day. One day it took that much food. You get the idea? He's feeding 10 to 20,000 people a day at these parties. I can remember nights as a teenager and partying myself and having just nights of laughter. My friends and I would just laugh so hard. We were under influence of this, that, or the other thing. And that's what he said. He said, I tried laughter, but it was foolishness. Laughter doesn't accomplish anything. Laughter never gives back. It's necessary at times, but it doesn't fulfill. It's all about receiving. And then he tried wine, he says. And I can recall many nights of trying to cheer myself up with wine and other alcohol and other drugs and things like that as a younger man, as a teenager. And he said that he still held on to wisdom. You say, well, how can he be drunk and hold on to wisdom? Well, I mean, I'll give you an example. I was a straight-A student and smoked a lot of pot when I was in high school, but I still maintained it. See, you could still maintain, but the life that you're trying to accomplish through finding meaning in these things that are meaningless. Friends, even if you can still get on with your life, you can't put your focus into these things, into pleasure, into folly and partying and drugs and alcohol and all the like, because they lead to the same futile conclusion that Solomon begins and ends this book with. Speaking of ending, that's the end of the time I have in this message today. We'll pick it up in verse 4 tomorrow or next time you join me. Again, you can go to the washandword.com website. That's washed, letter N, word.com, and find out information about this business and this ministry. And we invite you to come by the Wash and Word hand car washing business in Churchill in the Palace Shopping Center. Let us know you're hearing these messages and give us a little encouragement. And have a blessed day.